You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is David Ocker. David, the vice chairman of Profit and professor emeritus of marketing strategy at the Haas School of Business, UC Berkeley, is the winner of 4 career awards for contributions to the science of marketing, the Paul D. Converse Award, Marketing Strategy, the Vijay Mahajan Award, the Theory and Practice of Marketing, the Buck Weaver Award, and Brilliance in Marketing, NYAMA Marketing Hall of Fame. He has published over 100 articles and 17 books, including Strategic Market Management, Managing Brand Equity, Building Strong Brands, Brand Leadership, co-authored with past on-brand guest Eric Jochumsthaler, Brand Portfolio Strategy, From Fargo to the World of Brands, Spanning Silos, Brand Relevance, Ocker on Branding, and his latest book, Creating Signature Stories. His books have sold well over 1 million copies and have been translated into 18 languages. Named as one of the top 5 most important marketing business gurus in 2007, Professor Ocker has won awards for Best Article in the California Management Review and twice in the Journal of Marketing. A recognized authority on brand equity and brand strategy, he is. A regular columnist for AMA's marketing news, he writes regularly at LinkedIn and davidocker.com. David, welcome to On Brand.
Delighted to be here.
I am so pleased to talk with you and with someone else whose career takes them both in the college classroom and beyond. I always feel like there's not enough of us. I teach at the University of Iowa here.
Yeah, it's a nice mix, isn't it?
I think so. I don't know that I would do either one as well on its own, though that would probably make for an easier schedule and day as well.
Well, I was a pretty much pure academic for the first half of my career, and it's own world. You have to really be intellectually stimulated by the research that academics do.
Definitely, it is sort of a different animal. So, what was your path then that led you from traditional academia out into the world with your work at Profit?
Well, I've always been interested in real world problems. I'm kind of on the practical end of marketing research. Or academic research. I often did studies that did have some implications. Not that they were in any way visible, but I had that sort of side of me. I wrote some early on some textbooks that brought in that also linked me to the real world. I've always been connected to MSI, which was the real world force in academic marketing. So it was kind of something that's always been with me. But my real career turn happened in the mid 80s when I decided to focus on branding. It was my work in strategy that got me there. I came to realize that companies were too focused on financials, short-term financials, and not on building assets. And that really needed to change. And because of my background in business strategy and market research and in advertising, I really had a lot of tools. I was kind of halfway there anyway. And so it was a matter of putting it all together. And at that time, brand equity was just starting to emerge as interest of firms that were sort of running out of gas with their cost reductions and price promotions. And so, but nobody had defined it. Nobody had really known how to work with it well. And so that's when I started. I wrote my first book, Managing Brand Equity, that kind of defined brand equity. And my second book, Building Strong Brands, sort of showed people how to manage and build it.
Well, and for those that that don't know as well, you have a model named after you, or your own model,
yes.
Rather.
When I was sort of decided to when I got people interested in brand equity with my first book, they said, well, "Okay, I'll buy in. How do you manage it?" And there wasn't anything out there. And my model, or my philosophy that exists to this day, is based on several principles, and most of them are in response to the model of the day, which was the advertising agency model, which said you needed to create a three-word phrase that meant the essence of your brand and just pound that to death using advertising. Well, I said that that really is not right. You should the brand is going to have many dimensions, maybe 10, 12. And it's not just a one-word phrase. It's a multidimensional. And that was one principle. And I developed what I call the brand identity model. I now call it the brand vision model. And I prioritize those elements into the core identity, the three or four or five, the most important, and the rest are the extended identity. The second element of my model is that you don't pre-specify the dimensions. Most advertising agencies had something you had to fill in order to get your brand vision, and that would be a set of boxes. You know, what is your brand personality? What are your attributes? What are your benefits? And so everybody had to fill in those boxes, even though some of those boxes may not be relevant, but they still had to fill them in. And if there were other boxes that were relevant, then where did you go? And so I said, okay, you create your boxes for your brand, for your context. And so we asked the question, what do you want your brand to stand for? And it can be anything, and it doesn't have to include anything, everything. So, the third principle is that these core identity elements would actually drive programs. It would drive the organization, drive programs, drive messaging, and drive positioning, and drive product development. And so they weren't just words. They were platforms for action.
Well, I think that so much of that probably rings incredibly true for many listening about kind of some of those dated constructs of brand, the three words and then pounding them to death, because it's, you know, equity is something that is so much harder to build and manage over time, and across dimensions too. Tell me, in talking about some of the limitations of branding as defined by advertising, is it a problem that we don't always know where to put it, how to manage it in an org chart?
There's some organizational difficulties that are inhibiting brands and brand building, and they really have emerged from the organizational form, this decentralized, divisionized form that was created in the 30s at DuPont and General Motors. And So right now, you know, large companies will have over 100 different situations where a brand will reside. And sometimes the same brand will reside in all of those. You take a company like IBM or Toshiba, they'll have so many products all carrying the same brand. And so how do you coordinate? How do you get it efficient? And that creates what I call a silo problem. And so I once did a study. I talked to 50 CMOs and asked them, do you have a silo problem? What is it? And what are you doing that works? And what I learned from that was there is a terrific silo problem. It involves how to use a brand building budget efficiently, how to be consistent over time and over all these silos, and how to use promotions and events and things that have to span silos in order to capture enough budget to do it. If you sponsor the Olympics, you can't do it with one of these silos. You got to do it with the whole company. And what I found there was the solution is not centralization and standardization, because the silos have a useful organizational purpose. The solution is communication and cooperation. So the solution is to develop all kinds of methods, whether they be task forces or events or planning devices that span silos that get people talking, get people working together.
Well, the task force definitely makes sense, especially for a big sponsorship like that. Is there someone internally that you kind of consistently see, or some role? I mean, everything is siloed just by nature, usually, as to where branding lives.
Well, there's the typical organization now for a large company is to have a vice president of branding, or a chief marketing officer that's in charge of branding, and that would be a central place. And their job is to coordinate branding and build branding that in a way that spans silos. And again, the most effective thing they can do is to stimulate cooperation and communication among silos. But yeah, that's, and now we've had, of course, the complication of social media. Mm-hmm. And some companies, or a lot of companies, have a chief digital officer that tries to marshal that. Even within digital, there are silos. You know, sometimes there's silos by social media outlet and so on. But I think companies are learning that they need to change that orientation and sort of let digital permeate everything. It's rather like some time ago we learned that marketing had to permeate the whole organization. It shouldn't be relegated to a marketing department because everybody has to be consumer, focused and to start there.
You know, in looking at your career, you talked about the beginning and the management focus and then kind of shifting to branding in the 80s. And it seems like there's this, it feels like an arc from the more left brain function of business getting progressively more and more integrated with the right, because your latest move is all about brand stories. And your latest book, which I'm looking at right now, which is great, is Creating Signature Stories, Strategic Messaging That Persuades, Energizes, and Inspires.
The premise is that, well, first of all, in this digital world, I make the assertion that digital is content and content is stories. The premise of the book is that stories are so much more impactful than facts or descriptions of programs. If you can embed facts or descriptions of programs, you can connect them to stories. Their ability to impact is so much more. And their ability to gain attention, to change perceptions, to persuade, to energize, to inspire are not 20% better, but 200 or 300% better. And we got hundreds of studies that show that again and again. It's just astounding. And yet when somebody is charged to create some strategic message, such as, what are our values? What is our value proposition? What is our business strategy? If you try to do that just by describing them, which is the inclination of most people because they want to be efficient, it doesn't penetrate. It doesn't break out of the clutter. But if you can wrap them in a story, or if you need a story to motivate them, or if you can connect them to a story, or if they're implied by a story, then it all changes. They get remembered. They impact. And so that's a basic idea. And so I'm saying you have I'm not talking about tactical messaging here. I'm talking about strategic messaging, usually to the customer or to the employees, but there are other audiences as well. So if you have a strategic message, and that's a message that has a long life, that's really mission critical, that try to tell it by using stories. And so I've developed this concept called signature stories. And these are stories that really represent what you are as a core. And those are the ones that you want to put out there because they will attract attention, change perceptions, inspire, persuade, and so on.
So talk a bit about the framework that you lay out in the book for establishing signature stories.
Well, the first challenge is to get people to is to accept the fact that they really have to make the effort to create stories or to find stories. Because it's really necessary to the communication task that they won't get there by descriptions, and I have some really good evidence along that line. And then when they do that, they almost always have to invest in their organization. They have to somehow change the process, change the people, or change the structure. One of the companies that does stories really well is a staff of 8 people, and they generate several stories every week, and then they have to have some mechanism to handle story overload. So first, there's you have to get the motivation. Second, you have to create the organization that'll support it, and then third, you have to actually find and evaluate and present and leverage really impactful signature stories, stories that sort of pop, that break out of the clutter, that get noticed, that get shared. And then finally, you have to have a sort of a media plan. How do you expose those stories to your internal or external audience?
I love that because I think that so often we get lost in the tall grass of establishing the story, but we forget about how those stories are shared, how they come to life as well.
Yeah, just the presentation is important. I mean, a good presentation cannot save a weak story, but a strong story can be damaged or killed by a very weak presentation.
That is an important dynamic. A good presentation can't save a weak story. So it has to, you have to start with a strong story at the core if you really want to stand out.
That's right.
So you talked about a company that embraces story that has 8 people. Who are other examples that you cite that when we talk about these story concepts in action, that we might be able to look out and look to and be able to see out there in the field?
Well, I'll give you a couple of my favorites that are in the book. One is Barclays Bank. They were at one time the least trusted brand in the least trusted industry, and they did this conventional descriptive communication program to change their image to increase their trust, and it did not work. But then they redid their purpose. They got a higher purpose. They involved helping the community. They unleashed their employees to develop programs. They developed some 40 programs. They packaged some of these programs into a unit around digitalization, and they told the stories of the people that were affected by these programs. They were very emotional, intimate stories, and they started communicating those, and trust went up 35%, and all other similar measures did as well. It's a great experiment showing the power of stories. Another one of my favorites is Lifebuoy. It's a brand of Unilever, my favorite company, perhaps. They had this program they started in India to help a child reach five. 2 million children die before the age of five every year. And you can cut that way back if you get people to wash their hands right. And so they had a goal to get 1 billion people to change their hand-washing habits. Halfway toward the goal. And they have the whole program that involves kids and videos and games and promotions. And they put that into three villages and made a video of the progress centering on a woman of the village that saw her child reach five. And extremely emotional, very grabbing 3-minute videos. And the three of them in total got 44 million views. I mean, this is bar soap. And so if you want to, as you should, increase the visibility and energy of your brand, you're not going to do it by talking about bar soap, interesting though that mean to you. But the help a child reach five and these mothers that touched, that's something that attracts attention. That's something that involves. And we know from what psychology calls affect transfer, that if you find something in there you like, the plot, the character, the emotion, the feelings, that's going to get transferred to the brand. That's just the way it works. We learned that a long time ago when we learned the attitude toward the ad affects the attitude toward the brand and in hundreds of other studies. So those are two that are, among my favorites.
Well, I love the Lifebuoy example. One, Lifebuoy always makes me smile because of a Christmas story. The subplot with the mouth washed out with the Lifebuoy soap. But I also love that you pointed out that it's a bar of soap and that you have to think about the bigger story. I think that that's an important transom to cross, because many just kind of let their shoulders sag and kind of are crushed under the weight of whatever boring industry they feel like they're in. But you can create excitement. You can tell those bigger stories that can create that emotional connection that, like you said, is transferable to the brand and helps build that bigger connection over time.
Yeah, now the goal of Unilever was not to create energy and visibility, but that was a byproduct. Their goal was to make a difference in the world. And they're another product of this Dove soap with the real beauty kind of angle is the same way. But the byproduct of both of those programs, the Real Beauty and the Help a Child Reach Five, was to create enormous energy, visibility, and likability for the brand.
Now, in shifting a bit, I had kind of a full circle question to ask, and it's back to one of the first things that we talked about, which is the fact that we both have spent time in the classroom. And one thing that I quickly learned is that I don't know if there's anything else that makes you feel older than teaching, because I started out and I thought, oh, I'm not that much older than these students, but then they remained fixed at that age, and and I have not. But I think it's interesting, especially with marketing and how much it is changing. And I think there's this tendency to think everything's so different, and in plotting your career and in reading your bio, what would you say to someone about having a long career in marketing today?
Well, things are, the principles are the same, segmentation and positioning and serving the consumer, putting the consumer first. There's a lot of things that are the same, but definitely today's world is different. And it's driven a lot by social media and the digital kinds of levers that we have. And so the whole world is adjusting to that, and it's very painful to some and very exciting to others. And it represents a problem and an opportunity. But I think that there's no question that marketing, branding, and other aspects in market research, for example, have changed because of digital.
You know, that's so true, and I think that's kind of how I would describe it as well, that those core principles are the same. But I like the idea that you mentioned that the levers are different, because it means that kind of what's behind it is the same, but how we accomplish it, the levers that we're pulling to do it, are different, and they kind of pull in different ways too that they haven't previously. Is there any particular skill set that say you're talking to a graduating class of marketers that you might say is the one thing?
Wow. Well, I think that I was a statistician. My first 15 years of my career, I was a statistician, and I did quantitative modeling. And today, there's a really an important role for somebody that has that skill, as a core skill or as an ancillary skill, because of analytics. And analytics have the potential to do so much these days, but they can also cause a lot of harm. So there's definitely an analytics route. And beyond that, I think that there are some people that are really good at getting things done and to running a program. That's a conventional brand manager's job. And that continues to be needed. And there's also, I think, there's a certain percentage of people that have a flair for strategy and a flair for creativity. And those are things that it's really hard to teach. But if you know yourself and you're in a situation where you recognize that you do have that talent, I think that is something that can be really leveraged in a marketing career.
I love it. Analytics, strategy, and creativity. That would be marketing skills in a nutshell. David, as we start to wrap up, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, I have an example in my book, Knorr Soup, that did this marvelous promotion. The Knorr is all about flavor, and they have been about flavor for 120 years, but you really get tired talking about flavor, and you really can't just go out there and assert, you know, we have flavor, and you like flavor, and so on, mm-hmm. and it doesn't work. But what they did was they created this experiment where they leveraged their belief that people that are compatible within taste and flavor, then they're gonna be attracted to each other and actually perhaps even have a higher chance of falling in love with each other. And so they developed this flavor thing. Do you like spice? Do you like sweet? Do you like this and that? And with about eight dimensions, and they matched a boy and a girl that hadn't met each other on flavor. And they put them on the stage blindfolded. One was blindfolded, and the other had to feed them a dinner that was matching their tastes. And so you saw about seven couples get up there, and it was extremely awkward. It was really funny. And to see how they reacted, and some of them ended up kissing each other, and some of them interacted verbally in a way that was extremely humorous. It was really a home run. And again, in a very creative, innovative way, they told the flavor through a story.
Yeah.
And a story that elicited all these wonderful emotions.
Well, and it's like the soap. It's like Lifebuoy. It's like Dove. It's fine. It's kind of laddering up to the bigger story that reinforces the core story as well.
Yeah, that's right.
So, David, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Well, I do a blog. I've done about 350 blogs, and they can be accessed at LinkedIn, but also on davidocker.com, which is embedded in the Prophet website, Prophet. And that's sort of my current day-to-day thinking. And my last book before this one was called Ocker on Branding, and it kind of summarized the ideas of my prior 16 or so books, which were just kind of unwieldy. I mean, somebody said, which book should I read? And I didn't have a good answer. So this Ocker on Branding is kind of a Reader's Digest version of all my ideas on branding. And so that's really an efficient way to learn about my things. And then and anything strikes your, interest, you can go back and read the core book.
That is great. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes. David, thank you for joining us on Brand.
Oh, my pleasure, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Speaking of story, I was recently a guest on the podcast The Business of Story, hosted by another previous On Brand guest, Park Howell. So we will link up to that as well. Be sure to check it out and continue this conversation about finding bigger stories. And if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed, at branddrivendigital.com. You can also subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, tell your story about this podcast, and help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.